you are in the world, and welcome to Dark Reading Radio. I'm Kurt Franklin, the producer of Dark Reading Radio, and there is a great show on tap for you today. Today's topic is going to be the changing role of the Chief Information Security Officer, and it's going to be hosted by Dark Reading Editor Marilyn Cahotas. Now, before Marilyn comes on the line, let me remind everyone that this is an interactive program. That means that we aren't just here for the fabulous conversation that's about to take place, but for the online discussion that will be taking place right alongside. Now, Marilyn and her guests will be joining that online text discussion at the bottom of the hour. And until then, we'd love to see your voice in the conversation. To take part, all you have to do is to type your comment or your question into the box labeled your post. Then be sure to click that big red post button beneath the box. Well, Marilyn, I think it's time to get the show rolling, so we'll turn things over to you.
Thanks, Kurt, and welcome to our Dark Reading Radio Show. It's on, as Kurt mentioned, the changing role of the Chief Information Security Officer. I'm Marilyn Cahotas, Dark Reading's Community Editor, and joining me today are John Allen, Assistant VP and CISO at Baylor University, and Owenate Bestman, a Cybersecurity Executive Recruiter for Barclay Simpson. Welcome, both John and Owenate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, John, can you hear me?
Yep, thank you.
Owenate?
Yes, thank you very much. Yes, I can hear you.
A little dead silence there. We want to make sure our guests, I had someone to talk to today. Anyway, John, let me tell you about him. John Allen is the Assistant Vice President and Chief Information Security Officer at Baylor University, where he built out the information security group from a one-person shop to an integrated part of the university system. John has more than 10 years of experience in information and network security and is a member of the EDUCAUSE Effective Practices Committee and the SANS EDU Advisory Council. He has presented at RSA, EDUCAUSE, Treasury Instant PCI Workshop on topics ranging from PCI compliance to InfoSec in the Age of Cloud and Agile IT. Now, Owenate Bestman advises CISOs, heads of security, and human resource departments on hiring trends, market movements, and staffing needs. He started his career staffing IT and operational risk in the banking and regulatory organizations, and over the years he's recruited both individuals and teams that meet specific technical and/or leadership requirements for some of the world's largest companies. We're going to go right into our Q&A, but I want to remind the audience about the online chat that's going on alongside our radio show. And if you have questions for John or Owenate, please post them, and they'll respond to them when they join the text chat at the bottom of the hour at 1:30. So to get the ball rolling, I want to kick it off with two questions to both of our guests. First, how would you describe the role of the CISO today, and how has it changed over the last few years? John, since you have that title, why don't you go first?
I think it's changed dramatically. From what I have seen starting back in, you know, a one-person shop back in the early 2000s doing this, I was a technical guy. I was a guy that was responsible for making sure firewalls operated and intrusion systems operated and those sort of more what we would consider today operational security requirements. And the role that has begun to emerge more and more, and I think it's beginning to refine itself even more so in the last couple of years, is going more to a risk advisor and making sure that people understand risk and understand what decisions they make with technology and information and how that impacts their business and presents a risk for their business. I think we were at a period of time there for a while where the CISO in most organizations was owning IT risk. And I think we've seen some shift there as well. In some organizations, that makes sense. In other organizations, such as our own, there's lots of different information risk, and it's owned by different areas of the university. And so what I'm really doing more and more is advising those users on the decisions they make around that information, which systems and how those systems could put that information at risk, put the university at risk. And so those conversations end up being more about relationships and trust and less about whether or not the firewall is working. Though still critical and absolutely operational requirements need to happen, the emerging role seems to be much more about risk advising.
Owen Ante, do you want to add your observations?
Yeah, I do echo those sentiments. My participation is primarily from a number of heads of departments and board members who come to me looking for CISOs, effectively. Now, initially, years ago, what we saw was that there was a strong emphasis on technical capability. It tended to be a tick box exercise, if you will, in terms of talk to me about some of the SIEM tools. Do they have experience in pen testing? Do they have experience in cryptography? Now, there's less of an emphasis on the technical element of it, but more of an emphasis on assurance-based. What are their communication skills like? How would they liaise with the board? Talk to me about processes and programs and policies that they have implemented. Because with the obviously with the security taking a higher high emphasis now, there remains to be communication skills absolutely necessary for this. So it's not just the technical elements of it, but good strong communication skills. We've seen that in not only our job descriptions but actual interview questions. I decided to look at some of the interview questions that some of the high managers were asking about 4 to 5 years ago, and they were all based on tools primarily. One of the questions was, talk to me about your thoughts on this open source tool versus another open source tool, or what are the best tools you use to prevent breaches? And now the emphasis is, how do you sell security to key executives within the firm? How do you manage C-level executives, and really, what's your vision of security? So probably softer side is the wrong terminology, but more assurance, people skills element of it that's required in CISOs now.
Now, has that, the traditional reporting structure for the CISO was reporting to the CIO. So has this evolution in the job and the role that both of you described, has that evolved to a change in the reporting structure? Do you find that the CISOs are still reporting to CIOs, or is that hierarchy shifting?
In some situations, yes, they still are reporting to the CIOs. Some still report to CTOs, but one of the shifts I've seen is CISOs reporting directly to the board, and also a strange shift is that in a lot of firms, they also report to legal as well. So that almost emphasizes the removal of some of the technical aspects of a CISO. I have clients in which the CISO reports to both compliance and risk, the head of risk. So that's one of the things I am seeing. Either on a trend, they report more to the board, or they report to a governance-based function as opposed to technology-based function. This isn't always the case, mind you, but this is certainly a trend I'm seeing, especially with some of the advanced industry markets out there. With firms that have just acquired a CISO, and what I mean by that is that there are many firms out there that outsource the whole of their security, so they then have new requirements for a CISO. So this is a complete greenfield operation. And those sort of firms, because of the infancy of the CISO, a lot of the times they would still report to the head of IT or the CTO or the CIO, but more established organizations do tend to move it more to the governance field or also directly to the board. So it really does depend on the maturity of the organization and their maturity of security.
John, how does it work at Baylor?
So it sort of evolved over time. Originally, I reported to an individual that was responsible more for infrastructure, kind of technology infrastructure. In the last few years, that's migrated that I have a direct report to the CIO with dotted reports both to general counsel and our compliance offices. That a lot has to do with the focus on enterprise risk management as an overall process that's been started at the university that goes much more beyond InfoSec, but total risk understanding and mitigation for the university. And so as a result, I kind of have dotted lines there, especially with legal, as that partnership has really had to strengthen as we move to cloud services and rely so much more on those sort of services that they provide to make sure we have the correct controls in place for our data.
And is there, do you find there's friction between when you're dealing with this, with the CTO or the CIO or?
So I'm very fortunate and probably extremely in the minority. But with the institution here, it's very much a family-oriented environment. Everybody gets along. There isn't a lot of friction about issues. Everybody sees risk as something we need to be careful of. We know the issues in the news. We want to avoid being those issues in the news. And so we haven't really run across circumstances where I felt like the CIO or CTO or anybody was making a decision that I would have to back channel on. Generally, where we see those relationships get leveraged the most regarding audit and compliance is dealing with external parties to IT and the decisions they're making around information that deals with compliance data. So think FERPA, Federal Education Rights, or Family Education Rights, Privacy Act, PCI, HIPAA, those sort of things. And so those are the areas that we end up leveraging those relationships more, not so much within the organization itself. And I do say that that's very dependent on relationships and people, and so there is certainly some recognition that given different people, that might not work.
How long have, now do you, what is your function in dealing with the C-suite or the corporate board? Are you called upon more to have a seat at the table? Is that
significantly
changed?
More than traditionally? Yes. I think if you backed up 5 years ago, maybe once every year or two, I'd have any presentation to an EC. We call it executive council, which is all of our vice presidents and president, or to the board. And now I'm giving at least annual updates, sometimes biannual updates to those folks. Really work to build the relationships. I'm very tied in with our board's audit committee. They get presentations not only from myself, but anytime we have external assessments done, the external assessment team comes in and does presentations to the board, and that's sort of a check and balance, right? So they're not just hearing the word from me, they're hearing the word from somebody else that we're actually doing what we say we're doing. And so we spend a lot of time making sure that that message is on target. It's very easy when you get to those C-level conversations and the board conversations to get lost in the details or to just overwhelm with visuals. You know, we've all remembered and seen the map. You know, here's the map of all the attacks we've seen on our campus. Well, what's the value in that? We've all joked, you know, metrics are very difficult to come around information security, and metrics that provide value at the board level are even more difficult, I think. And so really it's about building a relationship to where you can have those conversations about what are the risks that we're concerned about and what things are we looking to do to take care of those risks and talk more about strategy. And, you know, the operational details are the operational details, and you will at times have to talk about those, especially if you have an incident of any kind. But overall, those conversations with the board members need to be things that are focusing on how is information security making sure that the organization is going forward in its strategic goals, and align that with what the overall organization is doing. I think the problems that can happen at times is if information security has a strategy, but it doesn't align with the organization, and they don't understand where the organization's headed, it's very difficult to meet those goals. And that's why you can find yourself struggling, you know, being called the office of no. You have to understand where is the priority in the organization and how can I help make that happen? And do it with, you know, risk in mind. And occasionally do I still have to, you know, think about breaking out the hammer and saying, no, we can't do something? Occasionally. But it has become the absolute exception. Whereas I think when you backed up 5 years ago, it was very commonplace that I had to be the one to say no to things.
I went on to, when you're looking to recruit a CISO and the companies are giving you their checklist of in the job descriptions, what are they, you know, what they're looking for, what are they telling you about the interaction with the board and the C-suite?
Interaction with the board and confidence in interacting with the board is absolutely crucial for the CISO today, based on the information that we are provided with. Not only that, but it's also the ability to recruit like-minded individuals, there will always be an emphasis on technology. I mean, in 2015 and late 14, we saw a great emphasis on Internet of Things and also cloud security. So organizations, you know, always will respect the technical element of it. But the relationship building is key to this. Also, good communication skills, and what I mean by that is it is very beneficial to have a CISO with a technical understanding, so that when he or she is liaising with the chief architect, who is speaking in highly technical terms, you know, the CISO is able to understand that and then relay that to the board. So yeah, that is that's absolutely crucial. And one of the emphasis that the hiring managers put on us, they ask us, look, have you met this person? You know, what are they like? How do they come across? Strange as it sounds, they even look at what they do in terms of hobbies that's on the resume. Things like this were not that important years ago, but they do prove to be quite important, because there's a certain buy-in element of it. There's a certain sales element of it. They need to sell an idea, and they need to sell their vision of security. A lot of members of the board, with the greatest of respect, have very limited knowledge on security. They care about the share prices. If we have a breach, what's going to happen to our share price? So they do need the assurance from the CISO, and they need it in their terms, which is often layman's terms. And with that in hand, again, it does depend on the industry sector, but there's also a commercial element to a CISO now that there wasn't necessarily before. Years ago, it could be a case where, you know, the CISO and security as a whole is seen as just no man. No, you can't do that. You can't launch this product. It's too high risk. But the CISO now will say, yes, there is risk attached to it, but this is how we get around this. This is how, you know, these are the potential flaws. Risk versus reward, and with that, you know, you will need the communication and the assurance skills. They are crucial for it.
Yesterday, we got a press release from a college in Burlington, Vermont, about a Master of Science in Information Security Operations. It's an advanced degree that they described it as elevating the practitioner's strategic planning abilities in cybersecurity. Do CISOs today need a business degree, you think?
I was going to say, so let me paint a little bit of my background, because I think it gives some information as to skill sets that end up people are looking for more and more. I came into school in 95, and so it was really at the birth of the Internet when I started college. And I started as a political science major. And at the time, I thought I might go to law school, or wasn't really sure, but that was kind of where I started. And then I got a job in IT as a student. And next thing I know, I found my passion with technology. Fortunately, I was able to complete my degree, and then I came on board here full-time. I then went back and got my master's in computer science. And so what that has provided me is I've got a very broad base education, in that I've got technical skills and also more the softer ability to communicate, things like that. Now, what I find very difficult in a lot of these programs is it's hard to cover that landscape. It is very hard to put somebody out there who can talk technically, build relationships. And so I think what we're finding is that, you know, the really good CISOs out there, absolutely they're hard and high demand, because it's really hard out of school to build this. A lot of it ends up being through experience and knowledge and a very unique skill set of somebody who can be technical as well as being people-based. The place I find that coming into play more often than not now is traditionally we always thought about a CISO being technical, technical, technical. But let's look at the breaches, and let's look at the root cause of many breaches. And more the root cause ties back to a person, a social engineering scam, things like this. And so now all of a sudden we're talking to the CISO saying, hey, we need you to do education. We need you to be an evangelist within the institution or the organization. And so that's a very different skill set than we were talking about 5 years ago, that we still expect them to meet those needs of 5 years ago as well. And so it's evolving into a very, very unique role. I think the thing we also have to keep in mind is the maturity of this discipline. If you go back and look, how many organizations had CISOs 10 years ago or 15 years ago? And you look at how many have CISOs today, this is a very new role. And it's a role that we're seeing change very dramatically and very quickly because of that. We're in the infancy of information security when we really look at it as a full discipline. And so I think that's why we're seeing this change happen so, so rapidly. And some people struggle, honestly, to adapt to those changes.
Oh, and Ante, want to throw in your 2 cents?
I think that was excellently put, actually. Going back to your question in regards to the academics around it, I don't think a business degree, for example, is necessarily that crucial. What is crucial is to have proven experience in making commercial decisions and having proven experience in liaising with the boards in a satisfactory manner. Just to go back to what John said, I completely agree in terms of how new the CISO role is and how quickly evolving it is. In 2012, actually, we worked on, as a company, we worked on 33 CISO roles, and 15 of those roles were contracts. In 2015, we worked on 85 CISO positions, and only 5 of them were contract. Now, when I say contract, I'm referring to daily rate or interim, as opposed to being paid a salary with benefits and so forth. Now, that's quite significant in itself. It's for a daily rate contractor, it's often not necessary to get sign off from the board, whereas a permanent position of that seniority, there's a lot of red tape, there's a lot of signatures that are involved in this. So we are seeing more of, we are seeing the board take the CISO role more seriously, and it is effectively quite a new role. A lot of these times, it's not a case of replacing a CISO who's retired or moved on, but it's a case of a brand new CISO, and often the board don't know what they want. Sales are telling them one thing, IT is telling them something else. Now, that this balance that we strive for, and that I'm tasked as well, trying to find a utopia of an individual, it becomes ever more challenging with the growing demands of a CISO. So, just to go back to your question, the academics having a business degree or something of that nature is not crucial, but what is important is the ability to really evidence what you have done, and the only way this can be done is through previous work experience, because CISOs are not rookies. You will have experience behind you, often good 10, 15, often 20 years experience behind you, so it's more important to make the changes in your day-to-day experience as opposed to going back to get further academics in business.
Is there typical would probably not be the right word, but what would you see in a CISO job description today? Is there something that's even standard, or that you're seeing that's kind of uniform across the different companies, and John, at Baylor, in your experience or with your peers?
The only thing that's standard, I personally, I really require a job description for a CISO. The only thing that is standard are the typical just basic terminologies and cliches, if you will: stakeholder management, policy implementation, strong communication skills, vision. Now, these are all soft skills. There's rarely an emphasis, and I'm seeing that more and more, there's rarely an emphasis for any particular technical requirements. Now, there could be technical requirements relating to a particular industry sector, the telecoms sector, maybe, a little bit of experience in voice over IP, but that's usually not on a hands-on and perspective. With financial services, regulatory experience in dealing with FSA, which is our regulatory body, but when it comes to the technicality element, not much. But the reoccurring trends are rather buzzwords and cliches as opposed to tangible things.
John, if you had to write a job description for your replacement, what kinds of things would you put in it?
For me, really, a lot of it is going to be those soft skills. I think more and more what's happened with the CISO is that the technical skills are becoming more assumed. And so as you talk to recruiters or other peers in organizations and things, people assume that you have technical skills. That's not even a question anymore. And that may not be that, you know, you're going to hop on and build the firewall from the ground up, but you understand how all these technologies work, how they interact, what type of controls are out there. The thing that people seem to be searching for and struggling to find are all those soft skills. It's the things like ability to build relationships, ability to have a strategy, ability to convey that strategy. I mean, it's one thing to be able to sit down on a piece of paper and write down, this is my strategy. It's a whole other thing to be able to sit in a room of 50 or 100 people and convey why that strategy works for the organization and needs to move forward. The other thing is the awareness stuff. And so awareness starts at the top of the organization, right? If your board and your executives don't buy into it, then nobody else is going to buy into it. And that goes for anything when you talk within an organization. And so that person needs to be a little bit of a salesperson and not in, you know, the slimy used car sales way, but, you know, more in a, hey, I'm passionate, I believe in this, and you should too. And really has to sell that this is an important thing for the organization to continue moving forward. Sadly, we've had plenty of examples in the last few years where a combination of technology leadership or CISOs really haven't done the best job that they could have done once a breach even happens, right? And so, you know, we all know breaches happen. In our careers, each of us will experience breaches. And how do you manage that? How is that person in a crisis? Because there's plenty of people who are great on, you know, normal day-to-day activities. But how are they going to be in that pressure cooker situation where, you know that something's gone wrong and you're having to figure it out and answer to the media and answer to your auditors and answer to your board? And are they going to be able to handle that pressure situation? And so I think, you know, maybe not so much in the job description, but certainly in interviews, those are the sort of things that need to be flushed out. Because more so than many executive roles, this position is going to have to be a Swiss Army knife. And they're going to have to be able to pull out any number of skills at one time to deal with what's the business of the day. Because the business of the day changes every single day of the week.
You know, in continuing on the Swiss Army knife analogy, one of the big responsibilities in this role, in any management role, is hiring staff and staff development. So what, in terms of, you know, the CISO, do you look for, John, and Anawante, what you're seeing in your recruiting, what are you looking for in the people that you're selecting as sort of key members of your team? What are you looking about, essential skills, technical skills? You've talked a lot about soft skills, but what's the kind of sweet spot for both of those on your team?
So for me, it's twofold. I really want somebody who has broad-based experience or has illustrated in their career the ability to change technologies and learn new technologies, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to happen. I can guarantee that the tools and the things that we're doing in security today will be different in 2 to 3 years. And so I need somebody who can adapt. That's probably first and foremost for me. Secondly, absolutely still goes back to the ability to communicate. More and more my security analysts are engaging people on campus and working with people on campus, and they're the face of information security. And so I can't have that be somebody who's, you know, well, what do you mean you clicked on this link? Are you an idiot? No, that's not going to sell information security. It's about education. It's about explaining what's going on. We have to realize more and more the people that are using our technology are just that, users. They don't understand anything that's going on in the background. And I've gotten to see that firsthand with students here at the university. It's kind of the Apple generation, right? They don't know how the iPhone works. They don't understand operating systems and drivers or memory or anything that you back up 10 years ago. And even standard users knew, oh, I need to install a driver for this. I need to do this to make my computer work. We're all becoming users. It just magically works. Well, the result of that is we're much more likely to fall for issues and scams and things like that. So the security people need to be able to teach, believe it or not, how to make these users more aware And information security awareness is probably one of the greatest focuses for us in the future as we move forward. And we've done it for years, but we're seeing that more and more someplace we need to invest. And so I try to make sure that as we hire analysts, they can be broad-based like that. Sure, they need to be able to probably do some coding. They need to be able to operate operational equipment. They need to be able to do things like deal with vendors. Because more and more, as we're dealing with the cloud world, those are the folks that we're talking to. We're talking to vendors and peeling back what vendors are saying around their technologies and doing assessments of those technologies and mapping them out to our compliance requirements. And so these folks more and more aren't the ones who are flipping the bits. They're the ones that are going to have to understand how the bits work and then be the liaison between the users and the IT organization from a standpoint of risk. And so I'm very much about making sure that those soft skills are present and that somebody can learn. I think that would be the two factors that I look for more than anything at this point. The last one, and this is one that's very hard to tell, is, you know, their ability to want to be where they're at. And that goes back to, as we've seen, security people are changing jobs very rapidly. And it's an investment to get somebody up to speed. And so for as much as I can, I try to make sure that somebody has an affinity with the reason why they want to be here at the organization so that hopefully I get them for more than 18 months. You know, I'm not looking for a lifetime commitment, but getting somebody for 3 or 4 years versus 18 months to 2 years is drastically different in the ability for the strategic vision of security to be executed.
Well, I think we're running out of time, but I want, if you want to have a final comment, and then we'll switch over to the live chat.
In terms of the CISOs I recruit for, when they recruit, they often come to me. Now, it depends on the actual type of role. We've been talking about how removed certain technical elements of the CISO's responsibility is now as opposed to years ago. That technical element has to be displaced somewhere, and often it's displaced to individuals under them. Now, if I'm working on a cloud security architect role, typically, in such a niche role, all the CISOs care about is technical skills. A lot of the times in those kind of niche roles, it's fine if they don't have the stakeholder management skills. But on the whole, other skills they look for, training and awareness, project and program skills as well. A lot of the security specialists are going to be involved in the majority of projects within a firm. So they need to give a security vouch for it and also liaise with the key stakeholders within there. And just to echo John's point, and longevity is also very important, and it's extremely important for me as well. If I'm representing an individual and they do not last long in the firm, often, you know, these things do happen, but I need to ensure that I qualify them accordingly to make sure they're making the right moves for the right reasons, because it's going to look really bad on me. I don't want to be the recruiter who only recruits people for a few months here and there. So, yeah, that's my piece.
Good for your job security. And on that note, let's move over to the live chat, and thank you both so much for a great conversation.
Thanks to all of you. Thanks to all of you, and thanks to our listeners for being here. And to remind everyone, this isn't the end of Dark Reading Radio. No, it's just time for us to shift from online and on the air into the text discussion. Now, all of our guests, and Marilyn will be joining this discussion in just a moment. We'd love to have your voice in this discussion. Remember, to take part in this, all you have to do is type your name, your comment or your question into the box labeled your post. Then be sure and click the big red post button. For Marilyn Cahotas and all of our guests, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for listening. Be sure to check back at darkreading.com for information on next month's episode of Dark Reading Radio. Until then, be safe, and we'll see you online.